news, information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio.
Hey, did you know you can catch us on Facebook and Instagram?
Just go to facebook.com/marriedreviews or instagram.com/marriedreviews.
Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lex Podcast, episode 16, Married Movie Reviews, part 6. I am Lex. Over there across from me, in real space, not internet space.
I like how you're pointing as if they can see.
I'm doing the NWO side point over here, is my wife, Latasha. Latasha, say hi to the people again.
Hi, people.
All right, today we have reviews ahead. Only two reviews today. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Into the Storm. But first, we're going to talk about something sad that happened yesterday as we're recording this, so Monday. And basically, I was sitting on the couch just, I don't remember what I was doing. I was doing something. And you did one of those gasps that you do,
yes,
that always
do this
worries
thing
me.
Where I will read something or see something and I'll go,
yeah, just like that. And it's just every time she does it, it's like something bad happened, of course, but like something personally bad happened. But as it turns out, Robin Williams passed away on Monday due to some unfortunate circumstances. So I figured that instead of us kind of doting on the whole situation, we'd instead kind of list some of our favorite movies of his. And it doesn't have to be movies necessarily. It could be TV too, if you want. But we did ask the question on Facebook. We asked you guys what kind of roles you thought best summed up Robin Williams in your mind and the experiences you've had watching him. Rick says Peter Pan and Hook is the obvious answer. And I think I agree with that in the sense of I'm not a big fan of the movie itself.
What?
It's okay. I don't like Peter Pan or whatever.
But it's like a great version of that story.
It's the best version I've seen of the story, yes. But rather, that role kind of sums up him as kind of a man-child.
Yeah, it doesn't.
In fact, it's a shame we didn't get him in some sort of stepbrothers deal. That would have been really cool.
Great.
But, you know, Peter Pan, that whole situation pretty much sums up him as a person. Maybe someone that at one time tried to be too much like an adult, but realize
failed.
The best way to go about things is to do this. So,
be good. Yeah.
Stacy says Bicentennial Man, Patch Adams, and Good Morning Vietnam. I really like Bicentennial Man. I know a lot of people didn't like it. I thought it was a cool story, though.
That's the one where he's like a robot.
He's a robot, okay. Yeah. And then, like, it progresses over time. It basically spans a whole lifetime of
a person.
Person,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think I've seen that.
Basically, robots are like slaves, and then he gets freed. And
okay,
yeah. Patch Adams, it was okay.
That's on my list just because, again, it kind of shows that even when he tries to be serious, like he's goofy, and the role of Patch Adams allowed him to kind of portray that being goofy is okay.
Yeah,
I thought he did it really well.
Right. Good Morning Vietnam. I like that one because it's. It's not super serious, I guess.
It's kind of the same thing. Like, adding some silliness and lightheartedness to serious situations and trying to lighten the mood.
I think he's perfect in those roles.
Mm-hmm.
Steve says Dead Poets Society, which is a film I never got to watch. I never got around to. He has several films that I never got around to seeing.
I looked at his filmography. He has like 102 roles to his name, so it'd take a while to get through them all.
Yeah, from the 70s to here.
Yeah.
Death to Smoochie, which is yes, yes, yes on my list. I think it's brilliant. It may not be the funniest.
I don't know that I've actually seen that.
You've seen
all the
it
way
with
through.
Me. I'm pretty
Start
sure you've
finish
seen it all
or
the
just
way.
Some scenes?
I'm pretty sure, but I'm not, I guess, 100% sure. But it's not the funniest film, but also it kind of, it's a smart black comedy on the whole children's television deal. And then 1 Hour Photo, which...
That was actually, like, I was so impressed by that because everything you see him in is, like, goofy, lighthearted, and silly. And then to see him play against Ken,
he's
you know,
against
type.
Creepy in that film.
But he did
that's
it so
point,
well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he, like, it was shocking because that's not what you, when you think Robin Williams, you think goofy, silly. You don't think serious.
Right. And it was made just in time, too, because you can't make a, you can't really make a 1 hour photo anymore because there aren't really...
Right.
You know, I mean, you the occasional kiosk at Walgreens or Target.
But even then, you stand there and you do it yourself.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, and then Kelly says Mrs. Doubtfire, which nobody else mentioned, which is hilarious.
And then I want to also throw in Jumanji. I liked that movie, and Dexter and I actually just recently watched that.
Well, yeah, I've got a few myself here. Jumanji is definitely one of those movies that I watched over and over and over again.
And of course,
VHS.
He's the voice of Genie in Aladdin.
Right, exactly.
Know,
which is funny because we went to Disneyland and mm-hmm. saw the actual stage version of Aladdin. And it's obvious that the guy playing the Genie is trying to be Robin Williams as the Genie in modern day, making modern day references and all mm-hmm. that stuff. So I do wonder what if they did the show last night, if they mentioned anything.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know for sure, but I'd imagine they'd probably mention something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
A movie he did, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, was Jack. Which I really liked as a kid. I watched it recently, like in the past couple years, and I didn't like it so much.
Is that one of those kid becomes an adult things?
Well, he's accelerated
okay.
growth. So,
oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. He was in a movie called Toys, which I watched a lot as a kid, but I don't remember too much of it. I just remember it was really odd. It was really kind of like a, almost like a Willy Wonka with toys, I guess. But again, it's been a while since I've seen it. And, my wife is just pointing her phone at me.
I'm taking pictures for Instagram.
Oh, okay. Our Instagram, Instagram.com/marriedreviews. Check us out and follow us there. But back on point here. Good Will Hunting, of course, was a big role for him. He won one Oscar in his lifetime. And I'm trying to remember what that was. Do you remember? Was it for Good Will Hunting? I think it might have been. Oh, well. We'll figure that out later. Let's see. He won for, yep, Good Will Hunting. He won for Best Actor in a Supporting Role. So, obviously the guy achieved a lot. He was in so many things, and he did have a wife and a daughter and a few other children, I believe. But he, one of my favorite things he did was he named his daughter Zelda. Because him and his wife were playing Zelda at the time, around the time of her birth, and thought it was a cool game, so they named her Zelda. Him and his daughter Zelda filmed quite a few commercials for Nintendo.
Did they?
Yeah, about games, Zelda games and everything.
They were
really nice. They even did some vignettes for Nintendo where they discussed in length and all that stuff, so... Obviously, he's got four movies coming out, I think, still. Night at the Museum.
And it looks like from his filmography that Night at the Museum, reprising his role as Teddy Roosevelt, is going to be his last live-action thing, because there's something set to come out in 2015 where he does a voice.
Hmm.
So I'm not sure if it's an animated thing or what exactly it is. But, yeah, so it looks like, you know, he's not going anywhere from the screen anytime soon as a result of this, but it's, you know, definitely a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to come out when or whatever, but, you know, it'll be kind of sad seeing that, because Heath Ledger died before the movie was released, before The Dark Knight.
I think it was just after.
Was it?
Or, like, right amidst all of it.
Okay.
But then also you've got Philip Seymour Hoffman passed during the filming of Mockingjay Part 1, which is set to come out this November, and it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, they dealt with that, seeing as how he had a couple weeks left of shooting. But
it seems like every year we lose, you know, a good amount of people.
Which, you know, you expect it to happen anyway due to age. Like, Lauren Bacall just passed away at the age of 89, so, you know, that does happen, but I think it's extra sad when people are gone before their time, such as Robin Williams, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Corey Monteith, Heath Ledger.
Well, we also lost Harold Ramis this year, too.
Yeah.
So. But, yeah, very sad, and, you know, like I said, I don't want to kind of dwell on this, but if you have any thoughts that you want to send in, because you couldn't get them in this week, send them in via email, lexmarston@gmail.com, lexmarston@gmail.com. We'll read them on the air next week. If you kind of want to put your favorite roles of his or any memories you have, really, you know, just send them in, and we'll be glad to read them on the air. So we'll be back with reviews shortly after this.
I do. I do voices.
What do you mean, you do voices?
Ben, I do voices.
Yeah!
We've come to this planet looking for intelligent life. Oops, we made a mistake.
We're happy to be in America. Don't ask for a green card.
I want you in the worst way.
Boss, it's certainly a rough meeting, and it's not going very well for me, I'll tell you that.
Hey, boss, give it a chance. She's going to loosen up any moment.
Look at me right now, Moneypenny. I want to undo that bow and get to know you.
I'm crazy to make a deal with you.
Nancy and I are still looking for the other half of my head.
He's an idiot. He's doing it. I'm sitting on a gold mine.
Don't make me smack you, sweetheart. I'll do it.
Figaro.
I do a great impression of a hot dog.
Mr. Hiller, do you consider yourself humorous?
I used to. There was a time when I found myself funny. But today, you have proven me wrong.
Don't forget to check out rantemradio.com. That is the home of the Lex podcast. Also check us out on Facebook, as we mentioned at the top of the show, facebook.com/marriedreviews. Catch us on Instagram with instagram.com/marriedreviews. And that's enough shilling from me.
Into the Storm is Stephen Quayle of Final Destination 5's weather film, depicting a day in the life of a group of storm chasers, some thrill seekers, and some everyday normal people. This is a cast consisting of Richard Armitage of The Hobbit, Sarah Wayne Kellys from The Walking Dead and Prison Break, Matt Walsh from Veep, and more. And they bring together multiple story arcs. While the film was interesting and kept me entertained, it was nothing we haven't seen before from other natural disaster films like Twister and Volcano. The filming techniques were fun and well thought out, but the film wasn't anything to write home about. So I like these kinds of films because, you know, as I've said many times before, the whole purpose of a film is to kind of take you out of your own reality and put you somewhere else for a while. And I'm not going to lie, it makes me glad that we don't live in Tornado Alley and that we live in California, so we've never really had to deal with a tornado because they look scary as hell. But I thought that it was an interesting depiction, and I like the way that it pulled, you know, a couple of different stories together. kind of like in The Purge Anarchy, where you've got these three different stories happening and they all merge. I like that this kind of did the same thing. You had the storm chasers, that this is their job. You had the two idiots on their four-wheeler and then in their truck with their helmet camera. And then you had the group from the school, and namely the vice principal and his two kids. So, I mean, it wasn't anything crazy good. It was really cool with some of the filming stuff and everything, but I enjoyed it.
I think they took an interesting approach to it in the sense that they tried to aim more for a real life situation and kind of forewent some of the stuff that Twister did. But I also think it hurt the film because the film is pretty dull without the tornadoes. If you strip the tornadoes.
Well, and duh.
No, but if you strip the tornadoes and go straight for the stories that they're trying to tell, yeah, without the action scenes,
right.
It's basically a thrill ride. And without the thrill ride there, this movie doesn't need to be seen at all. So I don't feel like either the actors or the writers or the director did a great job of kind of endearing the characters to us. I think they tried in some instances, but it was almost so cliche. You have the single mother who's out chasing tornadoes. You have the single dad. And they don't connect romantically, but, I mean, they're pretty much, they team up to take on these tornadoes, essentially, you know. She cares enough to want to rescue his kids, and, you know, he's not a dick like the storm chaser guy is.
Right.
And so they're kind of together, but they're not really together. Twister had, and I'm not saying Twister's a great film, but I think Twister had much more interesting characters, and I think it had those moments like that you remember, that you'll remember, like the cow. Even though it's really stupid.
Right, and
for
cheesy,
that time,
but you remember it.
For that time, though, to do that,
yeah, it was pretty awesome.
That was a pretty good achievement in effects. And they have great effects in this movie, too.
But as you saying that, like, I agree with you that Twister is not, like, a great movie, but I do feel like they at least tried to flesh out the characters more.
It has
stuff,
more personality than this.
This was more like, ooh, check out my awesome Twister. Look at my cool tornado. Look at me.
Right. It seems like they went for a much
flash.
More realistic approach in Into the Storm, whereas Twister went more for, okay, we have these characters, and they have these dilemmas, and they have these connections. But the Twister is really secondary to everything else.
Oh, okay.
And with Twister, you got the scene where they're at the drive-in. That's a set piece. It's a scene. It's got a set that you will remember. It's unique. And it interacted well with the tornado because, one, it's movies that can be shown outside, so they have The Shining playing.
That's why you like it.
Well, it's no, but it, but they, but it, it's funny because they time it with the movie.
Right.
So Jack is trying to break down the door as the tornado's ripping the screen apart,
mm-hmm.
and they don't do anything like that in this film, really. And
again,
the special effects are great. I wish it were in 3D because I probably would have went and saw it in 3D because that seems like
fire tornado. That was awesome.
Well, yeah, I mean it basically. For people that don't know, what happens is that it's like this freak storm of multiple tornadoes are basically coming together. They're colliding, and you've got these storm chasers who are trying to make this documentary, which that leads me to the cameras and me having camera envy from all the cameras that they had. They're just fantastic, and but the thing that was a little unrealistic to me was the kids have,
and I don't
had
think
just
that that's unrealistic.
Maybe not, but even if those cameras were school owned, we didn't have that kind of stuff in our school.
No, and but again, like another
this wasn't
thing
a
that,
big town or anything.
But like you and I were talking, and I was saying that, you know, okay, they've mentioned that mom passed away. the kids would be entitled to, like, survivor's benefits, which are a couple hundred a month. So, you know, they could save some of their money for a couple months and be able to buy this camera.
If they're not, which this would be the most realistic thing, handing it over to the dad to pay bills, to help pay bills.
Well, technically it goes to dad, who would then disperse it to
kids.
Well, there
you go.
But what I'm saying is, you know, that is a possibility for that. But also maybe they are school-owned because both the boys are supposed to record this graduation and the oldest one goes off to help, you know, a classmate film something and the youngest one takes over with the graduation filming.
The other thing with the cameras that really rubbed me the wrong way is this half-assed found footage style that we've been seeing in a couple films already, where half of it is from the perspective of the cameras being held by the people on screen or in the film. And then the other half is just like, oh, well, we can't really get a good camera shot from them, so we'll just do our own camera shots
there.
Yeah,
that was kind of weird.
And it's just like, okay, well, that's a way to go. But for me, my taste is commit to the found footage or don't. Just pick one and film the movie that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there was points where cameras were being submerged in water and still working after the fact, and it was just... There's a lot of things that just weren't thought through, which for me as a viewer makes it feel like, okay, we're not supposed to take this that seriously then. So at that point, it's just a thrill ride, which the thrills are pretty great at this, especially if you're seeing it in theater, which is the only way I recommend seeing this film at all.
Right.
You've got the speakers up there and they're rumbling and stuff like that. You know, even though we didn't have the 3D, the noise and the vibrations from the speakers kind of made it feel like we were in a storm as the audience.
So what rating do you give this then?
I give it a 2.5. It's a non-offensive film, I guess. It's just, it's there. It's some, again, the only way I recommend it is if it's in the theater or if you have a surround sound that's good enough put you in there. I mean, there were some characters in there, some actors that I was kind of being much like the what film were we? I forget what film we were watching or reviewing that the characters. The Purge with Matt Saracen, Zach Guilford. He kind of distracted me the whole film because I knew him as this. Well,
did you get that with the youngest brother?
No, not at all.
Do you know who?
Not a fan, no.
He looked familiar, but I couldn't figure out why, so I looked him up. He plays the best friend guy in iCarly, which I've never actually watched that show, but I've seen, like, enough previews and stuff to, like, be familiar with the characters, but I was like, why is he so familiar?
I think his name was Jacob,
One of the cameramen.
Yeah, Jacob. Mm-hmm. He's played by Jeremy Sumpter, and he is...
He's also been in Friday Night Lights,
hasn't he? Yeah, he was J.D. McCoy in Friday Night Lights. And I liked him a lot, and I thought he played... Not in this movie. He was just okay in this movie. In Friday Night Lights, he played that role really well. But,
Who annoyed me actor-wise? The dad. Like, there are certain people that I feel like I hear them speak and I'm like, oh, they're British. Like, there's no way that they're American because that is, like, such a forced accent. And sure enough, he's one of them. But then there are other people that I'm actually, like, shocked to find out that somebody's British because all along I've thought that they were American or whatever. So, yeah. But he was definitely not one of those that sold me on his American accent.
Yeah,
it just kind of sounded forced.
To me, I don't know about all that, because I'm not that knowledge in accents and what they sound like when it's not a real genuine, authentic accent versus a forced one, unless it's really, really bad. But he did overact the whole film. And
it's like he was trying too hard to be, like, the brooding dad, and, oh, I've got to go get my son.
He was to the point where it was like he was a villain.
Yeah.
At first.
He kind of had, like, that, like, scowl.
Yeah. He was short on patience or whatever, you know. Someone spilled their drink and he'd be taken off the belt or something like that. It was scary. I was a little scared. Into the Storm has no heart, though. None at all.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It's, you know, if it's on Netflix and you've got really nothing else to watch, it might not be such a bad watch. But, yeah, it's not a very good movie at all for me. 2.5.
So you give it a 2.5. I give it a 3. Again, if you're going to be in theaters seeing it, go for it. Otherwise...
Yeah, if you, especially if you can watch it on an IMAX, because I felt... Would,
that might be really cool.
I felt that even our theater, which isn't huge anyway, but, mm-hmm. You know, it, our screen wasn't even big enough, really, to...
To do it justice.
Yeah, so... If you can find it 3D, IMAX, that would be a pretty awesome experience, I think. Leonardo, Donatello, Michelangelo, and Raphael are back in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, a reboot of the popular late 80s, early 90s movie franchise based off of an independent comic book and cartoon series of the same name. This time around, Michael Bay's Platinum Dunes Production Company and director Jonathan Liebesman are steering the turtle van, while Megan Fox plays April O'Neil, a television reporter looking for her big breakout story. O'Neil seeks out the truth behind a crime organization called the Foot Clan, and instead finds herself face to face with four walking, talking mutant turtles. This retelling misses on several things, from casting choices to the gritty feel of the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle universe. And I don't mind when a franchise is rebooted, but the changes made need to improve on the original concept for it to get in my good graces. Unfortunately, this reboot should have stayed on the shelf. I give it a 3 out of 5, and that is being generous because of the awesome CGI that was displayed in this.
And I have been waiting for this recording so that you would finally talk to me about the movie. Because
I talked to you about it a little bit.
Yes and no, and I want people to be aware that when we see movies, we are seeing them separately. We're not going together. So once we've both seen them, we will sometimes have some little minor discussions, you know, what'd you like, what'd you hate, and kind of leave it at that. We don't delve into it like we do on here, and that's because this way it's a little bit more organic and we're able to hear things for the first time, mm-hmm. or we'll reference the fact that we've brought it up previously. Mm-hmm. So I really want to know the details of why you thought that this was like a bad reboot, or what little bits and things you didn't like about it.
All right, let's start with casting first and foremost. So Megan Fox plays April O'Neil, and I didn't like this because I feel that April should be not fat, but like a bigger woman. Megan Fox looks like a teenager, and I thought that kind of drew me out of it, because when you see a news reporter, you don't necessarily see a lot of Megan Foxes. You just don't. I mean, and there's nothing... I understand that Megan Fox is of age and has children herself and all that, but it's not... movies aren't about what you are in real life. Movies are about displaying and trying to convey something over the screen, and I don't think it conveyed anything believable as Megan Fox playing April O'Neil. She didn't look like a news reporter to me. She didn't act like a news reporter to me. She literally, the only thing they did with her as a news reporter was something jumping on a trampoline. And I don't know if that was Michael Bay wanting to see her jump on a trampoline or what, but it wasn't my cup of tea. I thought she brought the whole movie down. The only parts that I kind of like were it wasn't even her. It was just Michelangelo being a prevert and going after her the whole time. But otherwise, I could not stand her. I know you didn't have the disdain I did for her as April O'Neil. But
not to the same degree. I mean, of course, when you look at the original April, like, where's my redhead? Like, you know, and I read some sort of article where Megan Fox said that she dyed her hair 6 different times to get the right shade of red.
Well, she needed to dye it 6 more times because it wasn't even close. Her hair was like
dark brown.
Yeah, it wasn't even close.
If not black.
I don't know.
I saw no reddish hue at all.
And maybe it was, but maybe they did color correction on there that made it darker.
Yeah, I don't know, but that part kind of made me giggle.
I mean, I know a lot of people don't know what you look like, but it was your hair, basically.
Yeah.
You have red in your hair, but it's
unless not red hair.
Unless it's sun hitting it, it's hard to see.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was number one. She didn't look anything like April. She didn't act like it, like April that we know. And see, I understand. And
that's one thing that I don't necessarily agree with, because I feel that, like, the one little news segment that we see where she's jumping on the trampoline is pretty much, like, afterwards she's like, okay, this is what my life is. This sucks. I want to be a real reporter. And that's why she goes out and tries to get information on the Foot Clan so that she can be the one right. to break this story. So I feel like she had the, you know, investigative reporter bit down and did that part fine.
But, like, even when she's, like, she's got her thing, she's got her little nugget of info, and she's trying to explain it to her roommate and everything like that. Again, it comes across like a teenager talking about this boy that looked at her today or something like that. It didn't hit it with me. And again, that may be because of what I'm used to, but at the same time, if you're going to change something, you know, it's got to feel better, and it didn't feel better to me. This was not an improvement over the April O'Neils that we've had before. And so for that, I can't say that. Moving on, though, to other casting, because we got a lot of casting things to go through. Tony Shalhoub as the voice of Splinter was absolutely dreadful. Splinter's supposed to have...
I didn't realize until you told me who did the voice, but right. the whole time I was like, this isn't the voice it's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be... it was... previously, a Japanese accent, which makes sense because Splinter and Shredder are supposed to be from Japan. And,
right.
You know,
and have known each other from previous.
Right, which they kind of didn't do in this one. Shredder was from Japan, but Splinter was just...
and Turtles were not.
Yeah, he just grew up as a as Splinter. So there was that. And Tony Shalhoub is trying to do... I don't know what accent. It's almost like half Italian, half... Japanese,
yeah,
like a New Yorker in Japan. You
know. Which I guess a New York accent for somebody who grew up in New York would make the most sense, but it's just, like you said earlier, it's not the Splinter we know, just like that's not the April we've come to know.
I thought it was cool what they did with him. It was cool to see more fight out of him,
mm-hmm.
Even though it was all CGI.
Not so frail.
Right, exactly. He used his tail and everything like that mm-hmm. to fight, and it was cool. He was a badass, but, I mean, the casting decision for him for that voice
Weird.
Was just awful. I thought good casting choices were William Fichtner as Eric Sachs.
He plays bad so well.
He's got an evil face. Even though in the beginning of the film they lead you to believe he's a good guy,
mm-hmm.
you know it's not going to be the case. You know it's not going to be the case with him. He did a really good job of mm-hmm. selling that. He was a secondary villain to Shredder, but
they didn't even really like.
That's another
beef
thing.
Up in the sense of they didn't even really give him much story.
Okay, let's go on to Shredder real quick.
Because, I'm not gonna lie, his suit was cool.
But that's the thing; he didn't have a normal suit.
Yeah, it's not what it was supposed to be, but it was cool.
So he has this Transformers-looking suit. It's all chrome and has a ton of knives that shoot out, and they come back to him.
Right,
like, it's like magnetized boomerang type.
Pretty much. He looked like Edward Scissorhands, and
right.
then his knives, like he can shoot them out. And then, oh, but look it, I can call them back.
At least he was Japanese, though. and they show him rarely, so he's talking to people in the shadows and stuff. Like, well, he's shadowed.
Yeah.
Which is good. Great. Fine. We're good there. We don't see a normal Shredder suit.
Mm-mm.
We don't see the purple, and we don't see any of that. He goes straight to that Transformers-looking deal, and he's pretty much missing through the whole film.
And
except
then surprise,
for at the end.
And at the end, ready to do the big battle scene.
Exactly. That drove me nuts. Do not. Why didn't they say that for the second film, which is coming out, which they
right.
knew was coming out? They had no reason to build up to that, and it just happened.
Because now they have it set so that in the second one, he can show up unharmed mm-hmm. and I'm still alive.
I can't stand it.
He literally just hit himself in the head, people.
That drove me nuts. And as far as my fandom for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I'm a fan. I was a fan when I was 5 years old. I collected the figures, the movies, watched them all the time, the cartoons and everything like that. But I'm not, like, super into the lore. I didn't read the comic books.
I've only been a fan since I was five.
Well, I'm saying I'm a fan when I was five, meaning I didn't really cling on to the story or anything. Like, you know, there's tons of it I don't remember. But even I'm just, like, outraged by the injustices they did. And I am not fully against this group of people rebooting films, because I like Friday the 13th, which is a Platinum Dunes Michael Bay reboot. And I thought they did it justice. It was really good for the fans. It was good fan service. Funny thing about that film, though, is Michael Bay actually walked out on the premiere because he was so angry at the film. I guess he didn't see it before it was really...
Did it not have enough explosions for him?
Oddly enough, the reason he walked out was because of the amounts of nudity. So, there you go. He's a weird guy, though. He was doing, like, some sort of press conference thing for, I think it was Sony, some TV company for their new TV. And he came out, started talking. He froze up and just went, I'm sorry, I can't do this, and walked off the stage. He's a weird guy. He's a rich guy, but he's a weird guy. So Platinum Dunes does a fantastic job with CGI and
see, and okay, stuff so they the do. CGI was like one of those that I even had to ask you, like, did it look like they were purely CGI, or did you at all
there
think
were
that...
moments. There were moments.
There were some moments where, to me, it was like, that's obviously CGI, but then there are other moments that I'm like, is that like a really amazing makeup job, or is that really good CGI?
I think when their backs are turned, that's when those moments of, okay, that looks real.
Mm-hmm.
That's when those were.
But what did you think of the actual turtles as well?
I'll get to that, but I'm not done with casting.
Okay, sorry.
Let me go back to casting. I don't want to get too far off the path here. So, Will Arnett as Vern, which Vern is a character from the cartoon show.
And he added, like, an additional needed bit of, like,
I thought he was well cast.
Humor.
But the original Vern was mean. He wasn't...
Yeah, he was kind of a prick.
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't helping April in the sense of, you know, wanting to get in with her and all that stuff.
But this also, was... kind of with the story in the first time, he kind of had to be a little bit hard for the story to work out, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, Will Arnett does an okay job. I think he was rightfully cast, but he has no edge to him. So he's kind of like, he's kind of like a nerd. One of the turtles calls him a nerd. And so that was just kind of, that was okay. I really like the casting of Whoopi Goldberg as Bernadette Thompson. And in the cartoons, it's Bern Thompson, who's a guy, but they switch it around. But I loved, that was awesome, because she's New York to me.
Yeah.
And that's, and she, also
talking,
she's...
Don't take no crap, I don't have time for you.
Right. She's also very charismatic. So when April O'Neil is trying to tell her about the Foot Clan, and she's just like, you're insane, and, you know, goodbye. it was fantastic. Johnny Knoxville as Leonardo, I don't think was necessary.
What?
He did the voice of Leonardo.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
I like Johnny Knoxville, and I think he is a really good voice actor, but there's no reason
really
for it.
Why? See, now, for me, I didn't recognize the voice of any of the turtles.
The other turtles aren't people that are recognizable to me, at least. Let me pull the casting up again. So Raphael was Alan Ritchson. Michelangelo was Noel Fisher. Then they had people, you know, do the suit stuff. So people play Leonardo, but then Johnny Knoxville did the voice for him. Danny Woodburn played Splinter, but Tony Shalhoub did the voice.
See, and
for
that's
him.
What I had asked you, is if you thought that any of it was, you know, people in suits with the CGI dots, how they filmed Avatar, or if it was just like strict CGI. And so I guess that kind of explains it and makes sense as to why they, in some instances, felt so real.
Yeah. Casting, trying to run through anybody else that I had a thing about. Just overall, I think it was...
What do you think, though, of the female Foot Clan leader chick?
I thought she was good. Great. That's Shredder's adopted daughter. Of course, they don't go into that at all.
Right.
So you're left kind of wondering who she is and why she's there.
I was
going
to say there was no intro to who she is in relation to that world, but also I don't recall in the original trilogy of movies back in the 80s, 90s, there being a female.
The lieutenant of the Foot Clan was a Japanese guy.
Yeah.
Which, another thing, the Foot Clan, they were not martial artists. Mm-mm. They just carried guns.
Yeah, that was slightly disappointing because I was looking forward to, I think that's like one of my secret and now not so secret things is I love to watch martial art fights. I don't know. It's just cool to me because the choreography that goes into it, it's like a dance. I like dance. Yeah, you have to practice it and choreograph it and make it work and look real. And when you see it, it's cool. It's beautiful even.
Yeah.
And we didn't really get to see that because instead it was just bat, 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 bat.
Yeah, and they had like weird purge masks on or whatever. Yeah. To me, that was, again, a change they made that just wasn't for the better because if it was the costume change, I could do with the costume change. But the reason they're martial artists, even if it's unrealistic to find 100 guys in the city that are all martial arts experts, it's important.
At least they have a handful of them.
Well, it's important because the Turtles need to interact with them in that manner.
How else are they going to get to show off their mad ninja skills?
Instead, they get shot. The Turtles get shot, and they have to use their shell for cover.
And who knew? They're bulletproof.
Yeah, Raphael gets shot a few times.
And he does, like, that cliche thing where he, like, flexes his muscles and basically shoots the bullets back. What? That was pretty lame. But I'm not gonna lie, I was into it.
That's it for casting for me.
Okay, so now let's talk about the look of the Turtles.
I couldn't get on the same page with that at all. I understand Turtles aren't the greatest thing to look at, but at the same time...
Not only that, but I get that they're supposed to be mutants. So, with the phrase mutant, you're expecting a little bit weird. But the Turtles that we grew up with were literally, like, people that just happened to look more like a turtle. Whereas this was, like... In each of the Turtles, I do like that they made each of them look pretty different. Like,
they tried to distinguish
Raphael
them more.
Was a lot bigger than Leonardo was, or was a lot bigger than Donatello, who was a little bit more geeky or what have you. I feel like that was good.
They tried to give him more individual personality. Like, Donatello has some sort of computer on his back or something like that.
Whatever that was. He wears glasses.
And that's not only does he wear glasses, he wears tortoise shell glasses.
Yuck, 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 yuck.
And Donatello's my favorite, too. So they just completely...
That was something else I was going to ask you, is if your favorite growing up has been messed up because of this, because...
I didn't like him at all. He was one of the weirder looking ones in the face, wearing the tortoise shell. And having the computer on his back. I get that he's the tech guy, the nerd, the whatever you want to call him, of the group. But that was just way too over the top. So some of the other stuff they tried to do differently was Raphael had a full headband instead of just a headband that covers his eyes. He had like a do-rag on. And I was disappointed that his New York accent was virtually gone. It was a little there, but definitely not as pronounced as the original films were.
But he uses Batman voice. I thought that was kind of funny.
But, I mean, that was part of, why he was so pissy. He was a New Yorker, basically. Out of everybody else, he was the New Yorker.
He was brooding and everything. He looked like he was, on steroids.
They all did. Even the smaller guys.
In comparison, though, I think that was weird for me. But one thing that I mentioned to you after seeing it that I liked better about this, at least to me, I feel like the version of these films from the 80s, 90s. And maybe it's because of what age I was when I watched them, but I didn't feel like the Turtles were teenagers. Like, aside from a little bit of, like, goofing off, I didn't really get the vibe of these guys are teenagers. Whereas I felt like they tried to make that a little bit more evident this time around, that, you know, they're teens and that they're immature in that regard, and, you know, they modernized it with the computers and, you know, things like that. So I felt like they did a little bit better with that now compared to then. But again, it could be because of the age I was when I watched.
So you said that to me earlier, and I don't feel that way. I don't feel like they, I think they were on the same level as far as immaturity or whatever you want, jokes. I mean, I thought they did a good job of portraying them as teenagers when they were actually kids. When they were smaller, when they show, which is a cool thing that they did, was they show them growing up in the sewer in a montage. They don't spend too much time on it. But, you know, those are definitely more teenager than what was the final product, I guess. They're supposed to be teenagers now. They just seem like young adults to me.
Well, because, I mean, that's another thing is we don't know. Teenager runs everywhere from 13 to 19.
Mm-hmm.
So were these like 15-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 19-year-olds? You know, how old are they actually supposed to be? Because you can have a different level of maturity when you're the upper age of the teen range than the lower. But just for me personally, I felt like I could definitely feel that these were more teenagers.
They're just so big.
Maybe it's because of the age I was when I saw it then versus now, like being an adult and knowing how teenagers nowadays are and act, I definitely believed it.
Yeah. I don't think the premise...
They have, like, noses now. Like, that's something nostrils. Else. Yeah, like, that was weird. And lips. They didn't have that before.
I think Ninja Turtles was something that was primed to be rebooted because the last movie that was made was in 2007. It was a CGI computer animated movie completely all the way through. The last live action movie before that was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, which was 1993. So it had been a long while since we saw Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Holy cow, 20 years.
Yeah, so...
Oy, I feel old.
I guess it was such a good opportunity, and it was missed so badly in my eyes. The only thing that saved this movie for me was the fact that everything looked so good. But at the same time, it's a Platinum Dunes produced film, so it's going to look like Transformers, and it looked exactly like Transformers. It had a lot of the same camera angles. Had lens flare throughout the whole goddamn thing. It just those blue lens flares and just it's okay for a few shots, but they did it the whole time. But one of the biggest things, and this is for me starting to admire the actual shots of movies more, is that they failed to use New York City as a backdrop during so many scenes, and instead we get total darkness. Complete blues and blacks. The only time I felt that they represented that backdrop well was in the beginning of the film, where April is going to check out the burglary by the Foot Clan and the docks. And in that sense, we get the smoke and the city lights in the background. And it felt, at that point, besides Megan Fox being April O'Neil, it felt like, okay, this is going to be all right because they get it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. They kind of just ran off from that. No more. And they did scenes in the subways. They did a scene atop a building in the middle of day. And they just, they completely botched it. And by the way, do all the Michael Bay's films have to have fighting on top of a building? And people falling off and
slash on top of a moving truck.
Yeah.
Falling down the side of a snowy mountain.
And that's another problem I had was that snow bank or the avalanche scene was so long. It felt like it went on forever. That was the biggest freaking mountain that they could have slid down. And here they are, they're driving, what were they driving? Well, Hummers down the whole mountain.
The other people.
Yeah, they're like not hitting any trees really, and just kind of there's trees everywhere.
It was a very treeless area. Mm. that they were sliding it down. Was,
I don't know. It just, it didn't really click with me, hardly any. And then at the very end, spoilers, I guess, kind of, you get, like, the turtle van shows up, and it's like, why is the turtle van here all of a sudden? Like, why wasn't it in the movie? Like, why are you just doing this now? Because the turtle van is something that the kids back in the late 80s, early 90s who watched the cartoon show, the turtle van was a big thing. The toy, the turtle van toy, cost a lot of money. If you had the turtle van, kind of
like
you were
the mystery
man.
Machine for the Scooby-Doo gang.
Or like in G.I. Joe would, you know, get in the big ships.
I think it's because, though, like this whole film, they can't go on the surface. They can't be seen.
Yeah, I guess so.
So
I guess
now that they've now that they've, you know, successfully been above the surface and, mm. you know, gone undetected, they've, I guess, proven themselves.
The personalities of the turtles weren't bad. Yeah. I think they were okay. But they just look so weird. It's kind of like you want to continue watching them, but then you're kind of afraid. You just want to cover your eyes because they look so ugly. And
I think it's interesting the way that they did it, though, with, you know, you see the turtles without seeing them. You see them half in the shadow. You see them as a silhouette, and it's pretty deep into the movie before you actually see them full on. And I think that was done well in terms of keeping the mystery.
I mean, it's like four Shreks with different colored headbands on. That's what it looked like, and it was scary as hell. So, you know, I don't like that new turtle song that they made with those rapper guys. Just awful.
I think it's funny, though, when they're in the elevator.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
they're doing their little beatbox
right.
Christmas album, something or other. That was great.
So, I mean, I've heard from a couple people who have enjoyed the film, and you have enjoyed the film.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up I have a younger brother. I have a couple of younger brothers. So, I mean, I grew up watching the Turtle movies as well, you know, whether it was as a family setting or just it was on in passing.
Right.
And, you know, I've watched them since being an adult and tried to watch them with my son who just isn't interested. But, you know, I don't, I guess, have the same feelings about things. I feel like Megan Fox did fine as April O'Neil. Like, I believed her as somebody who wants to be a journalist, doesn't want to just be a lame reporter bouncing on a trampoline. Like, you know, I bought that. I wish appearance-wise they had gone, you know, a different way. Because, again, like, April O'Neil's supposed to have, like, orange-red hair. And, you know, I don't think that her appearance was necessarily bad. I think part of it that's hard for me with certain people, seeing them in roles, is the first things maybe I've seen them in, they were teenagers. And because I'm the same age as them, it's, like, weird to know that.
Even if they
wanted, like, I don't know. I see people now, and it's like, oh, last time I saw this person was 10 years ago. So in my head, they're still a teenager. And then I see him, and it's like, oh, you're an adult. You're married. You have kids. It's just weird for me.
Even
so
if they
know,
wanted
maybe
to continue
going on.
If they wanted to continue down the younger woman route, I would have much prefer Emma Stone as April O'Neil than Megan mm-hmm. Fox. Because I think she's got a much better personality. And I think her, I think it would have been cool to see her, I don't know, interacting with the turtles.
I think we could have gotten some good sarcasm remarks back
I think
forth.
It would have been funny. But unfortunately, they didn't. They have, he has, Michael Bay has some affection for Megan Fox.
Transformers.
I mean, I don't know. I don't get it. Yeah. But I reluctantly, begrudgingly give this a 3 out of 5. If you're a Turtles fan from back in the day, do not see this. It will piss you off. And it will anger you. And I've already seen a couple of my friends who, one said he tried to watch it and quit after 18 minutes because it just, he couldn't. Another one watched it last night and said it was garbage. This is a polarizing film. You'll either really like this or you'll really hate it. And I really hated it, unfortunately. And it's, again, I'm not against reboots, remakes, or whatever. I'm not. Because I'm in the horror genre, and we get those all the time, and I actually like most of them. At one point, and I don't know if I still feel this way, I might have to go back and watch it, I prefer the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street over the first one. So, you know, because I thought it improved on things that the first one made mistakes on. But now that maybe I see the visual stylings, I might give it to the first one more. But this is, it's not, like, it's a cool premise and everything like that, and you can remake it and still keep the premise and the themes and everything like that, but they just didn't pick the right battles to fight. They picked the wrong ones, and they're going to die on their hill of money, because this movie made so much money, over $100 million already. It's going to have a sequel, so we're going to have to watch another one. And I do wonder if they'll cast Megan Fox as April O'Neil again, but I don't know.
If they didn't, what do you think that they would do in terms of the story? I mean, in the original, April was in all three films, even though it was a different actress.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that she wouldn't be in the sequel. I'm just saying cast somebody else.
Oh.
I don't know, cast Charlize Theron, for Christ's sakes. Just get somebody else in that goddamn role, because I don't want Megan Fox in there anymore. I did like that it was a nice touch that she was wearing a yellow jacket.
Yes. I read that they tried the yellow jumpsuit and it looked ridiculous, so they scrapped that and did the jacket.
Yeah, the yellow jumpsuit is ridiculous. See, that's a change, that's okay. They didn't have Baxter Stockman in there, and that's okay, because he's a weird character from the cartoon. He's a goddamn human fly, for Christ's sakes. But, you know, they just didn't really... They didn't win in this one for me. I can't do it.
See, and I don't necessarily agree that this is either a love-it-or-hate-it film. I enjoyed it. There were parts of it that I didn't like. There were parts of it that I thought were awesome. After you... I did.
Yeah.
Because it's another one of the... I'm one of those that, like, in the heat of the moment, like, I love everything when I come out of it, except for the ones I really hate. Like,
well, of course.
Like, Earth to Echo. I came out of it like, that was awesome! And then after I thought about it, I was like, WTF. Big plot holes here. Lucy, I thought it was great, but then when I sat down to think about what I had just seen, I couldn't even really process it, because it's one of those, like, you cannot explain that movie.
Yeah.
In Turtles, I liked it. I mean, visually... It's awesome. I love the way that they did the shadows and utilized the light and the dark and, you know, the color schemes that they did and this and that. The camera angles, the styles. I just feel like that was really well done. The CGI is, like, mind-blowingly amazing.
Right. It takes a lot of work to do that stuff, and they got their craft
down. And it's like there have been times that you've been playing video games that I have to, like, ask you, is that football a video game or are you actually watching something? Right. Because it's, like, so well done. And that's how this CGI was. That's why there were some moments that I'm just, like, staring, like, is that real or fake? And, I mean, they just did so well that it kind of blows my mind. So, initially, when I came out of it, I was like, 4! But now I am dropping it down to a 3.5. Because, you know, there are some little bits that I agree with you on. They could have done better. The story could have been a little more fleshed out. The characters could have been developed a bit more. They could have done more with certain things. But... I think it's good. I mean,
sorry about that, folks. My computer's froze too.
Is that Deadpool?
Yeah, it says the Deadpool. Okay, so I clicked on someone's link, and now it's playing the Deadpool theme or thing. Okay, we'll watch this later. Okay, so...
That was awesome.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
But folks. Yeah, 3.5. I feel like if you're like me, where you watch the Turtle stuff growing up, but you're not a diehard fan who knows the mythology of the, you know, everything, go see it, you'll enjoy it. But like he says, if you, you know, are a little more of the huge fan side of things, you may not enjoy this as much.
Yeah.
It's one of those that I think would be awesome in 3D, and I'm debating going this week to see it, since it does play 20 minutes after I get off work. So, you know, I may go see it in 3D just to see how that translates and everything. So far, the only thing I've seen in 3D lately is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And I feel like having seen it in 2D and then 3D allowed me to really appreciate and enjoy the 3D, so I'm thinking that I might... you know, get a kick out of it.
Well, CG, if it's really good, can obviously boost a movie a little ways, and you know, obviously three out of five is for me is not the worst film ever. You know, certainly
it's
I've given lower marks to probably four or five other films this year, so it's not the worst movie I've seen this year. It's just, if you're a fan and you expect a certain standard to be upheld.
Yeah, if you go into it with no expectations, you'll be a lot more
pleased. Yeah, exactly. I know a lot of people, and again, this is for a new generation, and you know, maybe it's just not my generation or whatever, but there are serious flaws with the film on a, I guess, what could have been level. Because they just kind of threw the veil of... It's tough to criticize these films because there's so much hard work done in the CGI department and the actual filming department, because they take really risky shots in the sense of they're spinning the camera all around and, you know, they're hanging it 300 feet above ground and trying to get a shot, and it's just, so it's hard to say, well, that's a bad film, because it's not technically a bad film. I've seen worse films. It's just it's nothing too inspiring.
Could have been better.
Yeah, it's, again, if you're a Turtles fan from back in the day, you probably are going to have some issues with this, even though I've seen people who are Turtles fans from back in the day and they didn't mind it. So yeah, that's our show for this week. Thanks for joining us, folks, and we'll be back next week with some more movies in tow. So if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to lexmarston@gmail.com. That's LEXMARSTON @gmail.com. Also, you can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/marriedreviews, or Instagram, instagram.com/marriedreviews. So until next time, see you later, folks.
Bye-bye.